Carlos, for Andy Musique. That was wonderful. It's great that we are able to take advantage of our members' talents, even when we're not together. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We strive to be welcoming to all, but we recognize that we all have biases that limit our understanding of how others may perceive us. We stumble in our efforts, but we commit to keep trying to grow our ability to love people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender identity, family structure, age, or abilities. And I am Robin Proud. I'm a member of the program committee. Since we don't have our name tags on, we'd like to invite you to add your pronouns to your name in Zoom. Introducing yourself with your pronouns is a great way to challenge the norm that these should be assumed and to create space for everyone, no matter how they identify. And all you have to do is click on your picture, press the three dots in the upper right, and click on rename to add your pronouns. We have a few announcements, and there are more in the emailed order of service. The order of service is now a link in the weekly news of the week. It's toward the top part as part of the In This Week's edition you'll find, and I have a suggestion that that be made bold or somehow more prominent. We're sharing our offering this quarter with the Tenant Resource Center, which is dedicated to promoting positive relations between rental housing consumers, that is tenants, and providers, landlords, by providing information, referrals, education about rental rights and responsibilities, and access to conflict resolution. Our virtual service next week, January 23rd, is Befriending Our Wounds, a Meditation by Lisa Glick. Lisa is a friend of Prairie, and I'm sure we'll do a wonderful presentation. She talks about how all of us have suffered emotional pain. Collectively, we're hit with the pandemic, climate change, environmental degradation, and political chaos. Individually, we worry about our children, our parents, our friends, our financial security, and our health. No wonder we're stressed. Sometimes we feel alone in our misery, but actually we're all in this boat together. And Lisa Glick, she and her will speak about mindfulness and meditation and lead a guided meditation designed to help us embrace and transform our internal wounds. Now, our opening song today is one that was recorded by Dan Proud, Barb Park, Lisa Pence, accompanied by Amber, and that's Love Will Guide Us.
cross will be the way on the road from greed to giving. Love will guide us through the hard night. If you cannot sing like angels, if you cannot speak before thousands, you can give from deep within you. You can change the world with your love. Love will guide us, peace has tried us, hope inside us will lead the way. On the road from greed to giving, love will guide us through the hard night.
Thank you. It's wonderful to have these recordings. Our chalice lighting is The Great Lesson by Reverend Olympia Brown, read by Dan. And if you have a candle at home you'd like to light, you can do so.
This great lesson. We can never make the world safe by fighting. Every nation must learn that the people of all nations are children of God and must share the wealth of the world. You may say this is impractical, far away, can never be accomplished. But it is the work we are appointed to do. Sometime, somehow, somewhere, we must ever teach this great lesson.
And our story today is The Day You Begin by Jacqueline Woodson, and it will be read by our Director of Religious Exploration, Alice Mant.
I think Alice is having some trouble getting online this morning, so I can go ahead and read that. Renee, if you can post it up for me. All right, The Day You Begin. There will be times when you walk into a room and no one there is quite like you. Maybe it will be your skin, your clothes, or the curl of your hair. There will be times when no one understands the word, how the words curl from your mouth, the beautiful language of the country you left behind. My name is Rigoberto. We just moved from Venezuela. And because they don't understand, the classroom may fill with laughter until the teacher quiets everyone. Rigoberto from Venezuela, your teacher says, so softly and beautiful that your name and homeland sound like flowers blooming, the first bright notes of a song. There will be times when the words don't come. Your own voice, once huge, now smaller, when the teacher asks, what did you do last summer? Tell the class your story. We went to France, Chayla says. These shells came from a beach in Maine. A boy named Jonathan holds out a jar filled with tiny shells so fragile they look like they'll turn to dust in your own untraveled hands. My whole family went to India, Spain, South Carolina. Each souvenir a small triumph of a journey, their travels going on and on. And as you stand in front of that room, you can only remember how the heat waved as it lifted off the curb. And your days spent at home caring for your little sister, who made you laugh out loud and hugged you hard at nap time. You can only remember the books you kept on reading long after she had fallen to sleep. And in that room, where no one else is quite like you, you look down at your own empty hands and wonder, what good is this when other students were flying and sailing and going somewhere? There will be times when the lunch your mother packed you is too strange or too unfamiliar for others to love as you do. When even your own friend Nadja will wrinkle her nose and say, what's in there anyway? and you'll wonder how she doesn't see the rice beneath the meat and kimchi. You'll wonder why she doesn't remember that rice is the most popular food in the world. There will be times when the climbing bars are too high, the run is too fast and far, and the game isn't one that you can ever really play. I don't want him on our team. You can watch. Maybe you can have a turn later. There will be times when the world feels like a place that you're standing all the way outside of. And all that stands beside you is your own brave self, steady as steel and ready even though you don't yet know what you're ready for. There will be times when you walk into a room and no one there is quite like you, until the day you begin to share your stories. My name is Angelina, and I spent my whole summer with my little sister, you tell the class, your voice stronger than it was just a minute ago, reading books and telling stories, even though we were right on our block, and it was like we were going everywhere. Your name is like my sister's, Rigoberto says. Her name is Angelina, too. And all at once, in the room where no one else is quite like you, the world opens itself up a little wider to make some space for you. This is the day you begin to find the places inside your laughter and your lunches, your books, your travels, and your stories, where every new friend has something a little like you and something else so fabulously not quite like you at all. And that is the story.
Thank you, Reverend Matt. We will now have a moment of silent meditation, starting and ending with a chime. Today's service asks a question, an elephant in the room, by Reverend Matt Aspen. Prairie strives to be a place where difficult conversations can be had by people that sometimes disagree mightily, a rare space in this world where decisions about what is in the collective best interest of the community can be made without fear of retribution. Oh, I just realized I missed the reading. Okay. We do have a reading, The Limits of Tyrants, by Frederick Douglass.
The Limits of Tyrants. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate agitation are people who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its waters. This struggle may be a moral one, or it may be both moral and physical, but it must be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. Find out what people will submit to, and you will have found out the exact amount of injustice which will be imposed upon them. The limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress.
Thank you. So in this space of prairie, where we strive to have all discussions, are there topics we're not quite ready to tackle? Today's service relates to our sixth principle, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Reverend Matt?
Good morning, everyone. It is good to be with you here today, as it always is, and I am so grateful for each of you. It has been almost 54 years since the civil rights activist who we will be honoring with a national holiday tomorrow was assassinated. The first efforts to set aside a day to remember his legacy were proposed 11 years after his death in 1979. The legislation made it through Congress and was signed into law by Ronald Reagan in 1983, and the new holiday was officially celebrated for the first time in this country in 1986. Can you imagine anything getting through Congress that quickly these days? Still, it took a good while longer, but it was finally officially recognized as a holiday in all 50 states in January of 2000. In the 20 plus years since that time, this country elected and then re-elected a Black president. Now, if you were just reading these facts on Wikipedia, you might think that we were living in a country which had long since moved past the painful history against which King and the other leaders of the fight for civil rights in this country sought to overcome. Sadly, if you are paying any attention at all to the news these days, you quickly recognize that this country is still a long way away from actually living into the dream that Dr. Martin Luther King shared with us. That dream where his four young children lived in a nation where they would be judged not by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. We have made progress, but there is a mighty long way to go. At the time of King's death, the recently merged Unitarian and Universalist faith traditions were actually well positioned to become a potent force in the struggle to overcome our nation's tarnished history of race relations. We had joined the marches in Selma, and Unitarian Universalist minister James Reeb, who, as you may know, our sister congregation on the west side of Madison was named after, had become a martyr after being beaten to death by three white segregationalists in 1965. It is worth noting that little media attention was given to the murder of Jimmie Lee Jackson, the Black deacon in the Baptist church and a civil rights activist killed by white law enforcement officers in that same space, the event that had been the catalyst for these marches in the first place. But it was Reeb's death that ultimately led to the national outcry against the activities of white racists in the Deep South. And it was Reeb's name that President Lyndon B. Johnson invoked when he delivered a draft of the Voting Rights Act to Congress. Wait a minute. Aren't we still talking about voting rights legislation in Congress today? The more things change, the more they stay the same. History does have a way of repeating itself, especially when we fail to heed her lessons. And that arc of the moral universe thing sure does seem to stubbornly resist the many attempts continually being made towards its bending. So, as I mentioned just a minute ago, during this pivotal moment in history, the recently merged Unitarian and Universalist faiths were actually positioned to become a version of the multiracial, multicultural faith community that had been envisioned decades earlier by Dr. King's mentor, Howard Thurman, in his Church of the Fellowship of All Peoples. Alas, it was not meant to be. As reported in UU World Magazine, the progression from the civil rights agenda to calls for Black empowerment was swift. Even as Martin Luther King led the Civil Rights March in Washington, Malcolm X was preaching not integration, but separatism. In 1967, racial rioting left 23 dead in Newark and 43 in Detroit. In the months before his assassination, King was being pushed by younger supporters to abandon nonviolence and alliances with whites. In response to this unrest, the UU minister Homer Jack, director of the UUA Department of Social Responsibility, called an emergency conference on Unitarian Universalists' response to the Black Rebellion. If you are not yet familiar with what happened next, I encourage you to Google the UU Black Empowerment Controversy and research this history for yourself. The tale begins with $1 million being pledged to the newly formed UU Black Affairs Council to help fight political repression and economic exploitation in the Black community and support Black cultural expressions and community education. From that point forward, let's just say that everything quickly began to unravel. Jeanette Hopkins, one of the chairs at the 1967 conference, later noted in her memoir, "We, who should have been a model in the fight against racial injustice, instead spent our energies fighting amongst ourselves." Let me say that again. we, who should have been a model in the fight against racial injustice, instead spent our energies fighting amongst ourselves. Whether you witness this history firsthand or are just hearing about it for the first time today, know that the wounds that were created during these events created scars that still run deeply through this association. Fast forward to today. There is a new controversy swirling through our denomination, a controversy that you may not have been aware of until a former beloved member of this congregation decided to share with the many gathered here the source of this current division. The controversy I am referring to began with the distribution of a book written by former UU minister Todd Eckloff in response to our association's attempt to find new and better ways forward in our efforts to build a more just and equitable world. Ever since that former member graciously let me and your board know that she planned to share these materials, I've known that I would have to come up here and speak to you about it. And truth be told, this is the first speech I've ever been afraid to deliver. But recognize, I'm not afraid for myself. Although you have the ability to fire me at any time if you disagree with what I say, and that could ultimately lead to the end of my ministerial career, I'm not worried about that at all. Even if my ministry goes down in flames, I know that I can easily turn around, go back to corporate America, land a six-figure job, and just give up the dream that fueled my ministry. No, what I am really more fearful of is the fact that if not properly managed, the movement behind the controversial materials that have been shared by this former member are developing a disastrous track record of tearing UU communities apart. I've seen this with my own eyes, I've seen my friends impacted by it, and it is truly heartbreaking. My primary commitment in this moment is to ensure that this doesn't happen to this community. Now, truth be told, I believe the foundation here is likely strong enough to overcome any challenge that this effort, known as the Gadfly Movement, may present, but it's not inevitable. I'm not going to go into the details of the debate at the heart of this controversy today. If you come across these materials and begin to read them, I encourage you to do so, but I simply request that you also seek out the myriad of writers that have sought to counter some of the false narratives that underpin some of the thrust of this movement. There will be plenty of opportunity in the coming weeks and months to discuss the structures at play on both sides of this debate. If you want to know more or discern my positions on this debate, ask me in the discussion or follow up with me. I will always welcome conversation, even with those that believe they may disagree with me. In fact, it is those that disagree with me that I most want to be in conversation with. What I really want to focus on today is the lesson our history seeks to teach us, to help us position ourselves not just for this potential dispute, if it ends up taking hold here, but rather to better prepare us to meet this pivotal moment in history we find ourselves in better prepared than those that came before us. We, who should have been a model in the fight against racial injustice, instead spent our energy fighting amongst ourselves. Eckhoff's main point is that the approach the UUA is currently espousing towards addressing the ongoing challenges of race relations in this country is wrong and is counter to the foundational ideals of the Unitarian Universalist faith tradition. What you will find if you decide to read his materials and then the rebuttals may feel very familiar. Eckhoff and others that have joined his crusades make a series of claims about the way things are and the way they should be based on their perspective. And various other voices have come along and attempted to discount his arguments point by point. One side makes a compelling sounding argument, the other side fires back with compelling sounding counters. The longer the debate rages on, mostly online, mostly on social media, the more heated the disagreements get, until both sides have so denigrated the other that the possibility of a healthful, productive dialogue is nearly impossible. We, who should have been a model in the fight against racial injustice, instead spent our energies fighting amongst ourselves. My problem with Eckhoff is similar as it is with the member that chose to relinquish her membership at Prairie. Not completely the same, but there are strands. Eckhoff will falsely tell you that he lost his standing with the UUA because he proposed ideas that were counter to the majority opinion. Of all the things that he shares, some of which I absolutely validate, but of all the things that he shares, this one fact, this inflammatory fact, could not be further from the truth. The reason he lost his standing as a minister in the UUMA is that we are a faith tradition not based on creed, but instead on the promises we make to each other regarding the principles we seek to uphold, promises that are made in the form of covenants. As a minister, I am beholden to an agreed upon and continually updated covenant and code of conduct that I have agreed to abide by, which includes accountability procedures if I fail to live up to these agreed upon intentions. Eckhoff's issue is not that he dissented. Dissent is both celebrated and expected in this faith tradition. It's foundational to who we are. He was censured because he declined repeated requests from our voluntary association to engage in dialogue with those that expressed that some of the points that he was making were both false and harmful, especially to those that hold marginalized identities. So again, I say that my issue with Eckhoff is nearly the same as it is with this member that renounced your membership and then shared these materials with the members of this community. I believe it's the foundation of nearly all the problems we see in this country today, exacerbated by social media. Freedom of speech is a foundational principle in this country and in this faith, and a person is free to express whatever opinions they choose. When those thoughts are shared widely, without rigorous fact-checking, and without the expectation that they will need to defend the claims that are made, you risk falling down a very slippery slope. Faith in all of our institutions is at an all-time low, from religions to government to the organizations that report our news. The evidence of this was on stark display just over a year ago, as a mob of angry insurgents came very close to overrunning the Capitol and potentially toppling our democracy, spurned on by individuals and a political apparatus that has very clearly denounced the validity of facts and rigorous debate as the foundation upon which healthy society should function. I hold no ill will to either Todd Eckhoff or the member that has chosen to step away, although I do hold Eckhoff to a higher standard because he had accepted the additional responsibility that comes from taking on the title of Unitarian Universalist minister. I surely hold our former Prairie member no ill will because I sense that she came to believe that the community was headed in a direction that she disagreed with, and she felt that it wasn't safe for her to disagree. I've tried repeatedly to invite her back into membership, and will continue to do so for as long as I'm here. I don't know that my invitations will ever be accepted, but that will not stop me from continuing to do what I've been called to do, to use my efforts to strengthen the bonds within this community, and to challenge us to be a place where all can come to debate the issues of the day safely and without fear of retribution. You see, the thing that initially attracted me to this faith and to this community specifically, and the thing that will keep me coming back again and again, no matter how vigorously we might disagree, is the stated intentions you have all made to each other. What this society says it strives to be, and in most cases is pretty damn good at doing, is exactly what is most needed in this world in this moment in history. A safe place where folks with different backgrounds, beliefs, and ways of being can come together in mutual support. As radical as the democratic experiment of the United States is, this faith tradition is grounded on just as radical a proposition. The premise that a group of disparate individuals, each granted the freedom to find our own way in the world, can somehow remain together despite the very different conclusions we may come to about the best way forward. Strength of the democratic ideal in this country and this faith are founded upon is that separate individuals, granted the freedom to pursue their own unique destinies, are ultimately better off if they defer some level of their own comfort to the betterment of the whole. You may recall a story I shared early on my time with you of a woman that asked me to explain Unitarian Universalism. One of the things I noted was that we replace the responsibility for determining what is true and right within each individual. Her response to me was, "That is terrifying." And ultimately, she was right. Because we humans are imperfect creatures. And left to our own devices, we don't always make the best choices for ourselves, never mind for the good of the collective. The strength of this faith tradition, the same as our democracy, is found within the relational bonds that are formed between individuals. None of us, on our own, honestly has enough power to achieve anything of worth. Any potential we have to make an ounce of difference in this world depends on our ability to put our differences aside and to work together for the common good. There is a heavy humanist streak running through this community, and I believe this is one of your strengths as well. My words today draw a great deal of inspiration from the Third Humanist Manifesto, which states in part that humanists long for and strive toward a world of mutual care and concern, free of cruelty and its consequences, where differences are resolved cooperatively without resorting to violence. The joining of individuality with interdependence enriches our lives, encourages us to enrich the lives of others, and inspires hope of attaining peace, justice, and opportunity for all. Goes on to say that humanists are concerned for the well-being of all, are committed to diversity, and respect those of differing yet humane views. The test of these ideals and the ideals of any democratic society will always be found not in the places where we agree, but during the times when we perceive potential differences. Eckhoff, and I think this former member as well, mistakenly believed that the UUA, or me in my role as a minister, is intent on imposing a set of ideals onto you, along with the mistaken belief that either entity has the power to do so. Ours is a tradition that grew up during a time that valued rugged individualism, and those roots run deep. There is a natural and healthy distrust of institutions and a continual challenging of their directions. But it is a mistake to think that myself or the UUA has a lick of power over the decisions made by this community. I challenge you to search the 50 pages of bylaws that govern our voluntary association and find a single power the UUA has to impact the functioning of this community. I can save you the time and promise you that it doesn't exist. This community could literally come out publicly and it says it supports the efforts of the Proud Boys and the insurrectionists that stormed the Capitol, and there is not a single thing the UUA could do about it. And if I try to lead you in any direction that you do not collectively choose to go, you can quite easily send me on my way, and there is nothing I can do about that. When we say congregational polity, this is what we mean. Each UU congregation is in charge of its own fate and direction. We are not a denomination beholden to dictates from above, but rather a voluntary association of member congregations, individual communities that covenant and affirm to promote a series of principles informed by the wisdom of many diverse sources. Our shared covenant as free members of this association is nothing more than a promise to one another of our mutual trust and support. One of our stated principles is the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Another of our principles holds that the path to this outcome is the use of the democratic process, both within our congregations and in society at large. If we truly believe these words, and we truly believe the democratic ideals upon which this country was founded are the best way forward for the betterment of all, then it is incumbent upon each of us to do all that we can to strengthen the structures upon which these foundations are built. Leaving the community when we sense we might disagree with its direction is not the path forward. This is a strategy that is being employed by those that are currently seeking to destroy our democracy through force. We once again find ourselves at a pivotal moment in history. I was in a meeting the other day discussing potential topics for future Sundays, and our resident historian and today's presider, Robin, held up a layperson from our history whose writings have been found, revealing fascinating interactions with many of the names we hold up as icons of our faith tradition. I reminded the group that this person was no different than any individual gathered here today. An individual inspired by our ever-evolving ideals, committed to the work of social justice, that just happened to live at a pivotal time in history that had an outsized impact on the formation of our current beliefs and the future of humanity. We are living in such a time. The UUs that participated in the failed integration efforts that have come to be known as the Black Empowerment Controversy were the same as the folks gathered here today. As I look back on that history, I can't imagine how different the world might have been if that collective of individuals at that moment in history had been successful in their efforts to find a way forward together. Can you imagine how different our world would be if that community, riding the wave of potential that was available in that moment of history when the Civil Rights Act was first adopted, had found a way to unite two peoples whose history to that point had been so violent and unequal to work collectively for the common good? As I reviewed this history, it is painfully clear where things went wrong. Groups with differing experiences tried to come together without grounding their work deeply in the only tool that we have available that has any chance of working in that situation, a shared covenant. As I imagine what might have been, I recommit myself to helping this community, to which I have pledged my allegiance, to strengthen its sacred practice of covenanting for the betterment of the collective. Because none of us knows when or where the next pivotal test of our democracy or our faith will come. All we can do is commit to learn from the mistakes made by those that came before as we strive to sustain the lofty ideals we each profess to embrace by our voluntary association within this faith. The path forward, as shared in that little story this morning, is as it always has been. Through the courage of sharing ourselves with each other and through the development of respectful human relationships, not in spite of our differences, but strengthened by them. Blessed be, and may it be so.
Thank you, Reverend Matt, and I'm sure we'll have some comments. I just wanted to say how much I appreciated this. At this time of year, we often have platitudes or self-congratulation about how the UUs were always on the right side and kind of leave it there. So do we have some comments? Just a minute here.
I see Kathy's hand. Kathy Gann.
Oh, Renee, where are you? Renee, will you do that? Introduce the.
Yeah, I can look for people. So, Kathy, do you want to unmute yourself? And then I see Katrina after.
Hello, everyone. And thank you, Reverend Nat, for your words. Well, I love the UU faith. The one thing that does disappoint me in a way is the underrepresented underrepresentation of people of color in the faith. And I don't know why this is, but and whether for us in particular, it's the location of Prairie or what it is, but I think the thing that we can do is to continue to be, to support social justice and to be accepting and loving to every person that comes through the door. And thank you again, Reverend Matt.
Thank you, Kathy. Katrina?
Thank you, Reverend Matt, for your sermon. I think you know that I agree with you very much that Prairie needs to kind of reckon with issues of injustice toward people of color. But I was kind of troubled by the oblique references you made to materials that were supposedly circulated. I mean, I will Google the Gadfly movement and so on later, but I never saw any of those materials circulated among Prairie members. So if they were, it was not to everyone. And so I found it challenging and almost, I worry that it will lead to gossip to hear about some materials without you explaining what's contained in them that not all of us have seen.
Yeah.
So I hope we can talk about what's actually there more openly than just, you know, expecting us to look for it later on our own.
I do apologize. I was told that they were going to be shared. I was warned that they were going to be shared. And then I had a lot of people and say that they received the material. So I just thought that they had been shared widely. That if that did not happen, if they were shared more individually, then that is a mistake on my part. But I was just going by what I was told and what my I just experienced. A lot of people had seen these things, so I thought maybe they had gone out collectively. There's some noise here. What I will say is that I would invite folks to come to my the scheduled chats if you have questions about these things. My main focus today was as much on the strengthening of our community to be able to work through any differences of opinion, not just these materials that have been shared, but anything that comes up. And that is what I would like to focus on more so than those materials. But I know there are people that have dug in and have read several books based on this. I've had conversations with several people, am very willing to, I'm very eager to have conversations about this stuff. But if you haven't looked at it, I encourage you to if you want to. But I also wouldn't encourage you if you're not all that interested, because I don't know that a good place to go. But I encourage you. I see Suzanne.
All right, let's do Mary and then Suzanne, because Mary unmuted herself. So, Mary Franz.
Yeah. I'm one of the people who saw those materials. I can't tell you exactly how or why, but it was something totally new to me. And so I asked Reverend Matt if he would talk about it, and I'm very pleased that he did, and I like his, I think what he has to say is excellent, and I hope that perhaps a limited list of sites that could be Googled or whatever you call it, so people can get a rather balanced view rather than highly polarized views. It would be nice because we probably all read the UU World over these past 3 or 4 years or whatever. I don't think we've gotten much of a grip on any significant controversy. So this was a total surprise to me. And I appreciate Reverend Matt bringing it up. And I agree the most important thing is to recommit to talking together to one another respectfully and not jumping in with preconceived notions. I'll mute myself.
Thank you, Mary.
I would just like to say that I too, as several others have said, would very much welcome a more diverse community in Prairie, just to kind of be on record with that. And I agree with Kathy that I don't know how to achieve that. And I know that's something we need to work towards. But the thing that really jumped out at me, and since I'm on the board, I have read the materials and seen them and had the time to do some research. But what really troubles me is that Reverend Matt said that this individual didn't feel safe having a different opinion. And that was really alarming to me, because I think just as we want to strive for a inclusive community as regards to race and people of color, we need to strive for a diverse community in terms of differences of opinion. And I think that creating a safe community is something we really need to strive towards as well, so that this individual possibly could have felt safe coming forward and expressing these opinions and opening a dialogue among the community.
That has been, I told Rachel when I first started, I said, there's going to be some things that you're going to think I'm a broken record on. And one of them is covenant, because to me, that is foundational. I've heard say that there is that UU communities have both a mission and a shadow mission. And the mission is those lofty ideals that we put up that make us feel good and excite us and energize us to take on some things. But the shadow mission is often much more pedestrian. It's we want a place where people who think like us can get together and hang out and support each other and witness each other's journeys. And it doesn't always go up to that loftier ideal. But if we are going to truly live into the aspirational portions of our faith tradition, it requires us to have mechanisms in place that can allow us to disagree even strongly while maintaining the relationship and relationships and the ties that bind us. Religion, the foundation of the word religion means to bind. It means to bind together, to intentionally bind together in community in support of each other. And for me, that's kind of pivotal to it all, is to make sure that no matter what we face, we have strong enough mechanisms in place to help us maintain our relationships so that no one is left behind at the end of a disagreement.
All right. I don't see any more hands. Oh, there's one. Okay, Nancy, we'll have you be the last for discussion, and we can talk more in breakout groups too when we get to that. So
I'd appreciate it if whatever materials has partially circulated could be made at least a listed so that we can all be on the same page with this. I understand. I was at General Assembly when this man came with his books and was asked to leave the General Assembly. So there is a lot of controversy about things that he may have done and said. But I find it difficult to be on the outside of the information. So if you could please list or share some of the information to people who are interested in it, I would appreciate that.
Yeah. That certainly seems fair and in keeping with my stated intention of making sure that all views are supported. The only thing that I'll say is that my response to those, I have read the materials. I've kept up with this rift for the last 3 or 4 years. And my only response is that instead of reading the back and forth banter that went between the folks that are espousing the ideals that were forwarded by Reverend Eckhoff and others, is that I've been in conversation with many, many, many people, colleagues, lay folks in the association that hold marginalized identities. And they have told me that the information that is presented in these materials is harmful to them. And I learned long ago in my training as a human resources professional, believe the victim. If somebody is telling you that they are being harmed in some way, the first step is to believe that what they are telling you is true. Now, as an HR professional, I was also trained to trust but verify. And I have learned over time that diligence of research in when things are brought forward is also a good thing. But in my experience in this instance, what I've been told by the folks who hold marginalized identities is that this information is harmful, and they have asked me to try to limit its impact in our denomination. And again, in keeping with our tradition of open and honest dialogue, I'm a little conflicted about those two polarities. I read a thing, I'm not sure if I can find it. I read a thing that basically talked about the difference between freedom of speech. I wish I could remember what it was. It's just the idea that all speech should be encouraged, but there is also work to be done to counter speech that is either hurtful or untrue. And so that's the thing that I'm kind of wrestling with.
Okay, we're at time. I see some more hands. So what we're going to do is continue on. And then after the joys and concerns, when we go into breakout rooms, I'll just leave for a chunk of time. Just it won't be one breakout room. It'll be all of us. And then people can just, we can have a bit of a conversation then, and then we can move into smaller breakout rooms. But I just want to make sure that if people needed to get going, we want to finish up the service. So the next thing is Robin and Dan for closing words.
Closing words. The Task of Religious Community by Mark Morrison Reed. Dan will read that.
The Task of the Religious Community. The central task of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. There is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our own lives and the lives of others. Once felt, it inspires us to act for justice. It is the church that assures us that we are not struggling for justice on our own, but as members of a larger community. The religious community is essential, for alone, our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all that must be done. Together, our vision widens and our strength is renewed.
Our closing music is Make Them Hear You with Dominique Wooten Embritson and the First Universalist Choir of Minneapolis.
Go out and tell our story, let it echo far and wide. Make them hear you, make them hear you.
our justice was our battle land. Our justice was denied. Make them hear you. Make them hear you. And say to those who blame us for the way we chose to fight, as sometimes there are battles which are more than black or white. And I could not put down my sword when justice was my right. Make them hear you. Go out and tell my story to your daughters and your sons. Make them hear you. Make them hear you. And tell them in our struggles we
recognized our member Morris in that group. That's one of the positives of this era, is that we get to have wonderful participation from afar. So Renee, did you want to stop the recording at this point, or did you want to have the discussion? Renee, are you there?
Hold on, everyone. There were windows all over the place. Let me stop the recording. We're going to do joys and concerns. So I'm actually going to lower
the discussion going.
I want to do joys and concerns first.
I think we need the discussion going.
Well, I'm going to stop recording.
We've got hands up.